Africa is for Africans, Asia is for Asians, white countries are for everybody. This is a violation of the United Nations Convention Against Genocide.
An unrelenting stream of immigration, non-stop.
Europe is not going to be the monolithic societies that they once were in the last century.
The fact of the matter is, the UK is never going to be white again.
The biggest genocide in human history.
Us, but they can't refute us. It's the Fight White Genocide Podcast with Laura, Ken, and Jeff.
Welcome to the Fight White Genocide Podcast with Laura, Ken, and Jeff, where we discuss whatever we think is important in the global struggle against white genocide. This is podcast number 15, recorded July 2nd, 2019. And today, Jeff, Ken, and I are joined by a very special guest, Georgia Peach of Santa Cruz, California. How are you doing, Georgia?
I'm doing great, Laura, Jeff, and Ken. And I want to say hello to all you pro-whites out there who are listening in today, because I really appreciate the interest in my story, which is really one of many stories of the deplatforming and demonetizing people, those of us who are speaking up for white Europeans and exposing the anti-white war they're waging against us. So it's great to be with you all.
Oh boy, Georgia, you are so right. And we are so thankful to have your voice on this important message.
I just wanted to give a little bit
of background on you, Georgia.
Yes, ma'am.
You have spent the past 8 years working for KSCO Radio. You were the host of your own AM radio program, which went on to become the most popular show in the history of KSCO. And as you just expressed, you did such a brilliant job at using that platform to get the message of white genocide out to a unique audience on the AM radio waves. You began your radio career espousing strong conservative values, but you realized more and more of the ongoing attack on white people and decided to speak out against it. And again, Georgia, we would just really like to thank you for all that you have done to draw attention to white genocide. And we'd love to hear more about your story about what happened at KSCO.
Well, thank you, Laura. The fact of the matter is I was not really fired. I had no signed contract at KSCO. I was never paid a dime. I was simply deplatformed, even though I had a great sponsor and people began donating money to keep me on the air, a lot of money. Almost $8,000 very quickly came in to the coffers there. And all that disappeared along with my sponsor, who didn't want to continue his sponsorship without my show. So it's real simple. I was deplatformed because I became popular for having the guts to advocate for white people, European Americans, our people. Now, many whites out there responded because they were hungry for this kind of talk, but I got punished for it. The anti-whites came out with their knives. Now, obviously, people, anyone who would punish this sort of talk have to have a deep hatred for whites. And I guess my message was just too much for AM radio because they had never heard words like white genocide. Mm-hmm. And that became a huge threat to our enemies.
Yes, it did. In fact, I mean, you were the first host on AM radio to discuss this.
Absolutely.
Among many, many other topics that you brought to light that had never been discussed before on AM radio.
That's true. That's absolutely true. You know, it was exposing our ethno-cleansing, which is white genocide, and that is something they don't want to hear on AM radio. Even though you guys have been doing it all over the internet, no one had ever heard that kind of talk on AM radio. So my problems began when I started speaking about white interests, our history, our culture. That's when the attacks began. I also, I don't know if you guys know this, but I had some pretty strong restrictions put on me along with others, which I followed, because the truth is my intention was never to speak out hate against any people. My intention was to speak up for the love of our people, our culture, our history, our right to exist.
That is amazing, Georgia, and it is brilliant. It is anything that is pro-white or, as you say, loving or applauding the white race is deemed as hateful.
Mm-hmm. That's absolutely it. Other people can stand up for their rights, their interests, but not us. Pretty bizarre in a country founded by us. It became a real battle with me that went on for years, and they kept trying to find a way to get rid of me. But I wasn't breaking their rules, you see, and so it was too obvious if they just took me off, right? So the excuse that they used was my language. Now, I don't know how many of you have listened to me, but I'm a Southerner. I'm a woman. I say things that are not PC. And as an example, some time ago, I started on my Friday show to have jokes called Penis Friday jokes. I was trying to throw in some humor, and people loved it. They looked forward to it. And I felt like it was time to start putting some attention to our men who have been forgotten. Now, KSCO never had any problem with that, Penis Friday jokes. But they searched very hard to find something to pull the plug on me because they said my talk was unfit for young ears. Well, what happened is one day, quite towards the end, I used the word butt plug describing Mayor Pete, who's running for president. And all I said really was I didn't care what he did in his own house. But I cared greatly what he did in our house, the White House, and I didn't think having a first man in the White House was a model that we need in America. So I finished my short rant without saying anything other than so much for Mr. Buttplug, and oh my God, all hell broke loose.
Yeah.
Now, mind you, I didn't talk in detail about buttplugs and how to use them. But, oh, KSCO was horrified that the mothers driving the innocent little children would just be beside themselves. Well, folks, there are no sweet little innocent darlings anymore because they're being taught to be sodomites in kindergarten. You know, they're being taught that homosexuality, transgenderism, choosing your own gender are all natural and normal. So clearly, it was not my using the butt plug word. It was an excuse to pull the plug.
Yeah. Well, you actually had them call you into a meeting before, and they actually told you it was about you talking about, quote unquote, white shit.
And oh, many times.
Yeah. Yes. So of course, this is the whole issue with the mayor of that town is gay. The talking about that was not the real reason. The real reason is because you were talking about white issues, and they even told you that in private, that you need to cool it on that.
Yes, they did. Essentially, I was fired or deplatformed for explicitly loving my own people and for creating an audience who loved hearing that. That was my sin. But you see, they couldn't say, hey, we're going to get rid of her because of her white talk. They couldn't say that publicly, right?
Of course not. No.
So they don't want to come out and say,
they don't want to come out and say, yeah, we're anti-white and we shut her down because of that. And that's how they worked with us as well on deplatforming us on many issues is just by making up some other excuse to take us off of like PayPal and other things like that.
Right.
Yep. Yeah. There can be no free speech for pro-whites.
Yeah.
And it goes to show, you know, that we are keenly aware, you know, we are keenly aware that there can be no discussion about anything white, as you've experienced completely. And should we dare to do that? Should we dare to speak out? As you found, Georgia, you'll be quickly fired from your job. You'll be threatened, harassed, and you know, the thugs, the screamers, and in other white countries, the thought police, you know, they come down and put you in prison for having these sorts of views. So it is what we're up against, and it's you know, that is why it's so brilliant for what you have done, Georgia, and speaking out against it. How did you come to this message? How did you get on board and see that this was what you needed to speak about?
Oh, my God, just from pure observation. It's everywhere. How can you not be aware that the war on whites has been ongoing for some time? I mean, I couldn't deny or go into denial, as many of the normies are, because to stay in denial, then you don't have to do anything about it. You don't have to become an activist or put yourself out on the front line and be at threat for all the things you just said. But it was just so obvious. It was everywhere. It is everywhere. Let me give you just, you guys, one more example of why we can't speak up for our people and even say it's okay to be white. Are you all familiar with Cabrillo College here in Santa Cruz? It's a junior college.
I'm not.
No.
Okay. We have UCSC here, but we also have Cabrillo College. It's a two-year junior college. And then last Wednesday, in addition to a stabbing on the campus, the well-loved statue of Martin Luther King Jr. was plastered with flyers containing messages, handwritten, that they labeled racist. What was the message? The message said, it's okay to be white. Now, the college issued the following statement about those flyers, and here's what they said. The campus needs to know that sheets of paper were removed from the base of the Martin Luther King statue this morning containing a message saying it's okay to be white. And quick thinking by our staff resulted in our ability to tamp down this act of microaggression against our students and community. But it represents another disturbing example of the divisive climate that our culture faces. Our students need to hear from us that hate cannot conquer love and mutual respect. So, I guess, folks, saying it's okay to be white is hate and divisive. That's what's going on everywhere. How can anybody deny it?
Absolutely.
Right.
The thing about Martin Luther King, wasn't he about civil rights? Did he mean civil rights only for black people? Do our white kids have a right to their civil rights? Aren't those kids at Cabrillo allowed to be proud to be pro-white, proud to stand up for their civil rights?
That's right. It's absolutely. That in any, you know. Exactly. There is no rights for whites, though. That's exactly what we're finding. Just being white is hate. You know.
Well, I believe there was a civil rights leader who actually stated that civil rights are not for white people.
Right.
I forget her name. Yeah.
Was that Mary Frances or something?
Yeah.
Barry. Yeah.
Mary Frances. I'm going to write this down and look her up. Wow.
That's right. She did. I remember that quote too, Ken.
Yeah. And the anti-whites always like to pretend that they have some kind of copyright on love, that their hatred for whites is love, and our love for whites is somehow hatred. This is how it works. And, of course, they use the media to demoralize and essentially indoctrinate and brainwash whites into believing that they have to hate themselves or otherwise they hate
racist.
Everybody else. Right. They're racist, neo-Nazi, white supremacists, fill in the blank.
Right.
That's really what happened on my show is I started remoralizing our people.
Yes, you did.
And they started stepping up and they started speaking out and they started coming in and using words like white genocide, talking about stories that they had then found and sent to me and wanted to share on the air. And that's when the, you know what, hit the fan. It was one thing for me to do it, but oh my God, I was actually being effective. People were starting to get it.
Yeah. And once you see it, you can't unsee it. In fact, you start seeing it everywhere you turn. Once you see what's going on, it's impossible to overlook it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The theme through everything is anti-white. And for the majority of white people, you know, it's their white self-hatred. They have to constantly profess how much they hate themselves in order to not be racist, not be a Nazi, not be a white supremacist. But that, you know, you brought up that you had noticed that you started speaking, and actually you mentioned it in one of your other interviews where you you noticed that once you started calling what was going on white genocide and pointing out how anti-white things were, that you noticed other people starting to see it and using the same terminology that you were doing, that you were using. Did that sort of spur you on then to see that how effective it was and the amount of momentum that you were gaining?
Yes, ma'am. And that's why I was punished, because I saw how effective it was. And I had planned, as I said, to keep this going because I was abiding by their rules. I was not talking Zionism. I was not talking Holocaust. I was purely talking up for our people. And I intended to keep that going. And that was the issue. It was being heard. It was being effective. And they had to silence not only me, but all of the people in my audience, which had grown because, as I said, people, you know, people are hungry to hear this. They really are.
Yeah, to be point, you know, for them to identify and to have it pointed out in such simple terms as you did in all of your shows. And, you know, it is, again, just so proud of you, Georgia, and all that you did at the radio station. It is fantastic.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you. And let me tell you this, Laura, it's still rippling. You know, my listeners are still deeply outraged and unhappy. They still communicate with me. My name is not allowed to be spoken on KSCO. You will get dumped if you even say Georgia or what happened or can we? Boom, you're gone. Okay. So it's not even allowed. But despite that, the people have not forgotten. You see, it picked up in its effectiveness and it has continued to ripple out there. And we are getting through, guys. I know you know this. There's an underground forming. They can't get rid of us. You know, I'm talking on your show. I've talked on other shows. I hope to be talking on other shows in the future. They're not going to stop us, no matter how hard they try.
Yeah, and because like we were talking about, once you understand it, you can't unsee it. So everybody
can't go back.
Right. There's no way to go back. So the more people hear it, it's just going to be like a pyramid and grow because of that. So there's nothing
it's
they
so
can
true.
Do. There's
and it generates with the
they
censorship.
They can't put the genie back in the bottle.
They can't. And the censorship, it draws more attention to it. You know, this has got more people outraged and more aware of what their goal is. They are totally targeting one specific group for censorship and demonization, and that the more and more that they do this, the more and more obvious it is becoming.
Yeah.
And I think that's where they're going to lose the battle. You are so right, Laura. They have overplayed their hand. It is so obvious now. No one can deny it. And it's so obvious who's being targeted. So people are. They're waking up and saying, hey, what gives here? What is this? I mean, even people who are half asleep are now starting to say, wait a minute, something smells here.
Yeah, and that's exactly why you said that this happening to you is a win for you, because they vindicated everything you said on your show by doing
that's
this.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Absolutely. Yep. I don't know if you guys have looked up It's Okay to Be White in Wikipedia. They call this message that is being spread by neo-Nazis and racist groups all white supremacists.
Right.
So I guess if you're pro-white today, you're a white supremacist. Now, that's the same paper, or the Good Times deemed me an anti-Semite, and they wrote an article about me, too. This is just everywhere. If you speak up, you are used, deemed with a weaponized word to stop the conversation, to stop the discussion of the issues, which I would have gladly discussed with the Good Times and offered to do so. But you see, they didn't let me. They just wrote what they wanted to write, which labels me now the biggest anti-Semite in Santa Cruz or maybe in California. And they did a hit piece on me again. And this is what they do.
Yes, that's exactly what they do.
Yeah.
Yeah, one thing a lot of pro-whites seem to think is that this is all white genocide is all about money. It's all about cheap labor for big corporations. But it's my contention that corporations do what's bad for white people, whether it makes them money or not, because they're not in charge. They bow to their leftist masters. Anti-whiteism comes before profits. Would that be your, would you agree with that?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Oh, clearly we see that. And I'll tell you something. What bothers me more of all of this is the anti-white whites. They are the ones, to me, that are the biggest disappointment. The people who have allowed themselves to be brainwashed into shaming themselves, hating themselves, despite the wonderful things that our people brought to Western civilization and created in this beautiful country we all live in. And now we're having trouble coexisting within that beautiful country because we're this stupid melting pot of so many different cultures, so many different values and principles. How in the world are we going to get along, and why don't those white people understand that?
They've just been demoralized. You've pointed that out on your show numerous times, the demoralization that they've been indoctrinated into, to where they don't want to speak on their own interests. They're afraid to. Many are afraid, and the others are just demoralized.
And we have a word for that, Georgia, for those white anti-whites. They're traitors.
Yes, they are.
Yeah, any hatred that I might have is reserved exclusively for traitors. The white anti-whites that argue in favor of their own genocide.
Isn't it amazing?
Yeah, and again, in one instance, you can blame them for it, and the other one is they are victims. They've been victimized through massive brainwashing and propaganda. They've been, indoctrinated into this, into pushing their own genocide.
Conditioned into hating themselves.
Right. Yeah. In one point, it is their fault, but in another, it's not. But once they hear the message, once they hear what we're saying, then they fully understand. And if they choose to go along with this anti-white program, then all of a sudden they're culpable in everything they stand for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, let's hope, because that's our only hope, that this gets so bad that people who, as I said, are in denial or have been so totally brainwashed. You know, if you just look at what Hollywood, what the media, what the glass toilet tube puts out on a daily basis, it's no wonder white people don't feel proud. We are the most demonized people. The way they paint us out to either be stupid or the most evil people walking the planet. I mean, decade after decade, that kind of poison is pretty hard to get rid of if you're open to letting it seep into your brain.
And then on the other side of that is if you dare to have pride in your own race, you will be hated and screamed at and threatened. And that's it. So they're conditioned into hating themselves with white guilt and with all the evil things white people have done. And then if they ever dare to go, well, hang on a second, whites have never committed a unique crime, but we've got an infinite number of unique achievements. Well, oh my gosh, will they be, labeled and harassed and made to apologize endlessly for their indiscretions or heresy?
Well, what I don't understand, if we are so evil, and the United States of America is such an evil land, why do people kill themselves to get here?
Right.
Why is it they're flooding to come here? If it's so bad here, why aren't you going to another country, a non-white country? Why here?
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's a great point.
Or just stay where you are,
They're coming here to be oppressed by those evil white people.
See, that's a great, great example of a talking point that completely destroys the leftist narrative.
Yes.
If you just repeat that, you just keep repeating that. They can't answer it.
Exactly.
Why are they coming here to be oppressed? I just asked that one question.
Another issue that I think, Laura, you and I probably can address better than the guys is what's happened to our women. Why are our women, particularly our white women, buying into this garbage? And why are they doing what they're doing to destroy our families, to destroy the idea of having babies, making beautiful little babies, and continuing what we've always done in this country? Mm. What in God's name has happened to our women?
Mm. Well, that was it. Back in the day, it was told, there was some quote that it was said, it's as it, for women, it's as important to paint a picture as it is to have a baby. And Bob Whitaker had written that in Why Johnny Can't Think, and he said there was a whole generation of women that bitterly regretted that. You know, that's it. You know, we are told these lies instead of, you know, what our most best job in the whole world is being a mother.
Yes.
But
yes, yeah. It's interesting. It's so interesting to me that these women who are working 80, 90 hours a week in these little stupid cubicles or wherever they are, they go home to empty homes, empty apartments. They have no family, no husband, no children. They're all on antidepressants. We've never had more women on antidepressants than we do today. So if you have it all, ladies, why are you so depressed? I mean, if that's the answer, why are you so depressed?
Yeah.
There's something missing.
It goes against the natural order.
That's it. Right. There is something missing, exactly, that we don't – there. Yep, absolutely. But that's what we're working at, Georgia. You know, we're working to, you know, really, you know, take away this demoralization, this beating down of our people and reinstilling this pride and this, you know, love for our people. And first and foremost, you know, we have to point out what is taking place, you know, what is happening. And the consistent message, which you have, you know, put out there, the message and pointing out those simple truths of what is happening, is the most important aspect of our job in getting people to understand what is going on. But yeah, I wanted to ask you a little bit more of how did you, you know, you said you became really aware of it, with what was, you could, you know, Blind Freddie could see it, but, was there any other, you know, introduction or how you came to this, using the mantra, as we call it, the white genocide mantra?
What happened, Laura, as my show grew, my audience grew, networking started, and the networking started turning me on to your shows, to all the other shows that I listen to daily. I mean, I could list them, but there's too many to list, and I don't want to leave anybody out. But we all know who they are. They begin early in the morning, and they go all hours of the day on the internet. I started then tuning in because people were saying, hey, you need to listen to this show, or here's a link to this show. And my God, it just was an explosion of information for me.
Wow.
I was unaware of Bob Whitaker, but I learned about him through shows like yours, through shows like Horace the Avenger, White Rabbit Radio, and all other people who were using the memes. I mean, it was like a networking thing of helping me to become much more informed than I was just through my observation.
Wow. That's fantastic.
That's how it works.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it is.
That is absolutely awesome. And what, so what are you planning now, Georgia? What do you think you're going to, where's it going to take you?
You know, that's a good question, and I really don't know. I'm thinking of maybe doing a podcast of my own. I'm also thinking of, for now, just guesting with people like you and others who have reached out. I haven't really decided going forward, but I certainly will not stay quiet. I mean, I will find a way to continue my message in one way or another. So it's just, I had a very serious illness about a month or so ago, and I'm still coming out of that, believe it or not. And I have to tell you something interesting. The illness occurred a day after a 2-foot, this is going to sound very, very crazy, maybe to some of you, about a 2-foot by 3-foot magnificent flower arrangement was delivered to my front door when I was gone. My husband and I had left for the day, gone to Carmel, because that was the first Friday my show had been pulled, and I didn't want to hang around town. I just felt like I needed to escape.
Yeah.
When I got home, that bouquet was there, and there was no floral note. You know, when people send you flowers, there's always the florist who put it together. Okay. Mm-hmm. This looked very professional, but there was no floral attachment, but there was a card, and in the card it said, "Freedom is not always free. Thank you for what you've done, Mary B." was the name. Now, I don't know Mary B. I searched and searched and searched to see who that could be. Never heard from her again. Couple of things. How did she find out where I lived?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, I guess it was because Mr. Swirling put my last name on the internet on his website when he said goodbye to me.
Nice.
And maybe she looked it up. So when I saw the flowers and I saw the note, my first instinct, being a trusting white European, was how wonderful. But I said to my husband, what if this had been from an enemy? What if this had been something terrible? All right? We put the flowers in my kitchen. Mm-hmm. The next day, my husband gets deathly ill. The day after that, I get deathly ill, and we're still coming out of it. Now, was it the flowers? I have no idea. I've talked to people who understand this kind of thinking, and they tell me absolutely.
Yeah,
I have no idea if it was a fluke. Let me say this. I'm not a sickly person. I did not miss a day in 8 years on my shows for being sick. So this was highly unusual, and it was a very bad, weird kind of illness.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think perhaps somebody sent me a little gift? I don't know. I really don't.
That's
never
incredible.
Heard from Mary B. again. It seems to me Mary B. had my address. Seems like she would have dropped a note after going to that trouble and said, I hope you enjoyed the flowers, Georgia. You know, so I could have thanked her. Nothing.
No.
Does that sound crazy to you and very conspiratorial?
Well, they're openly talking about punching Nazis, and CBS is openly advocating violence against pro-whites, so I guess I wouldn't put it past.
No.
Well, a lot of people who've been in this world we're in for many, many years tell me this is not unusual for people to do terrible things to other people that they want to hurt or shut down or whatever. I don't know. We could have just picked up a bug. That's very possible, too. I'm not saying that that's not true, but the timing of this was very odd.
Mm-hmm. And also coincidental.
And when I got the flowers, excuse me. When I got the flowers, I was answering my emails that day, that evening, and I was telling some of my listeners, and they said, I think you should call the police and have them come out and take a picture and do a report. And I said, maybe you're right. I said, okay, Monday morning I'll call the police and have them come over. Well, we were so sick Saturday and Sunday, and that sickness went on for a month that I wasn't even able to get out of bed. So the flowers got thrown out somewhere down the line, and I never made a report, so I have no idea.
Jeez, Georgia. And it's just coincidental that your old boss doxed you as well and got your information out there for these nasty people to get in contact with you. Yeah.
And you know, really, some very smart people, and you all know them, and I won't mention their names, but some very smart people who have studied this whole thing for a lot longer than most of us said, don't underestimate that. No, you are onto something there, because I still thought, I just don't know. I have a hard time believing that people would stoop to that, but I guess we're living in a brave new world here, folks.
Oh, absolutely. As Jeff just pointed out, they had a show on CBS where they openly advocated punching anyone who didn't have the approved opinion. You know, they call them Nazis and white supremacists, and I think they used Richard Spencer as the example, but that was what the guy said. He said, you know, sometimes they what is it, Jeff? Sometimes they, you know, need to be punched in the face, or you know, like, I mean, how much more?
And of course, all the violence that went on in Portland just a few days ago, and the media, for the most part, has not discussed the police are not doing much about it.
I can play the clip.
The guy that you refer to on CBS, I talked about that on the air. What I talked about was there is a new show on TV called The Good Life, and CBS actually put out an advertisement, a national advertisement on the TV, saying, with this black man with his dreadlocks, saying that if you see a neo-Nazi, you should punch them out. In other words, giving permission to anyone with white skin being labeled as a neo-Nazi, that you should have the right to punch them out. Right. And that also got me in trouble because I said, who are these people? What kind of uncivilized behavior is this? These people need to go back to the jungle. Well, that set off another firestorm, me talking about sending black people back to the jungle. But my point was, if you're going to talk and behave like an animal, you don't belong in a civilized country.
That's true.
Yeah, we're talking about the same clip here. Can we just play it quickly? Just
yeah.
Yeah, it's the good fight.
Yeah.
Is it all right to hit a Nazi unprovoked?
I was always taught to never throw the first punch, never instigate, defend, but don't attack. But then I saw a video of the white nationalist Richard Spencer being punched in the face during an interview, and I realized Spencer was in a pressed suit, wearing a tie, being interviewed like his opinion mattered, like he should be considered part of the conversation, like neo-Nazism was just one political point of view. And then I realized there's no better way to show some speech is not equal. Some speech requires a more visceral response. It's like Overton's window. That's the term from which ideas are tolerated in public discourse. Well, Overton's window doesn't mean shit unless it comes with some enforcement. So yeah, this is enforcement. It's time to punch a few Nazis.
Yeah.
If non-whites were being talked about the way that white people are talked on a normal basis on national TV, people would be in prison. They would not allow that to happen, the way that white people are discussed in average conversation on national news and media in Hollywood. It just would not be allowed to happen.
That's right. And the things that are happening, like you said, in Portland, and how Antifa either gets a free pass or they get their whatever they accuse them of get thrown out of courts. They never, ever are held accountable for all of these terrible things that are going on. I'm sure you know James Fields was sentenced yesterday to life imprisonment. And I'm not saying that the death of that girl wasn't a sad thing, because it truly was. But that was a kangaroo court. They really threw the book at that guy. And I'm not even saying, that he shouldn't be punished in some way. But I will guarantee you, had he been a man of color, that would have never happened. They would have used insanity. They would have used some kind of plea to make it okay had it happened in reverse. And this is why we're up against this two-tier justice system. We don't have any justice for white people anymore.
Yeah, it would have been just like Jussie Smollett. if the races were reversed, it would have been another Jussie Smollett situation. I think everybody knows that. Nobody really says it, but we all know that.
Exactly. Yeah. It's really incredible how they're getting away with it. What I want to know is, how are they getting away with it? What in the world has happened to the justice system? And why isn't President Trump really speaking up about these things in a much more forceful way? Because remember, folks, we are the people that got him elected.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. He has the ability. You know, that's our frustration as well. You know, he has the ability to take this on and take on censorship and stop massive non-white immigration into the USA, but he's not doing anything. You know, he's not, and his Tucker Carlson show, Tucker asked him, you know, indirectly twice about censorship and what he's going to do about it. And then the third time asked him directly, and he made some statement about, I can't talk about that, or I can find the quote. But, again, you have the ability. Why is Trump not taking on censorship of a specific group? It's only white people that are being targeted. And for violence, I mean, CBS openly advocating violence against anybody who doesn't have an approved opinion.
And I think Trump knows it. I think that he's got some boots on his neck. I think we know who that is. And that's why he doesn't do what we all believe he should be doing. I mean, let's just look, folks, at this opioid crisis. I mean, we can't ignore the opioid crisis either. I don't know if you've heard, but Mike Moore, who's a lawyer from Mississippi, has engineered a huge lawsuit against the drug companies because he wants them to pay. Now, this is the same Mike Moore who's behind the tobacco settlement in 1998. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
He says he has evidence that Ohio is losing $5 billion from the opioid epidemic. They are losing 6,000 people from this epidemic. Now, he is banking that a jury will award $1 billion to these people who have lost members of their families, mostly our kids, basically, because opioid Ohio is being flooded with these opioids in these very small towns. Now, we all know the Shackler family and Purdue Pharma are responsible because they own the patent for oxycodone, and they lied to the doctors about the addiction from these drugs. But I gotta tell you, I watched Mr. Moore on 60 Minutes Sunday night, and I was so impressed with him and his crew who are going after this. And you can tell they're all us. They're part of our group.
Mm-hmm.
But 60 Minutes, of course, they tried to spin it like, well, how much money are you going to make from this if you win? Nothing about the billions of dollars that Purdue and the Shacklers have made, killing off more people in 1 year than we've lost. When we lost in the entire Vietnam War. I was so offended to hear that Mr. Whitaker ask him that question when they have killed millions of people and profited from it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, these people created an environment so that opioid use is okay, all based on the big, big lie. And he's going to prove this in court. So I am so inspired and so happy to see people like Mike Moore and all of these other men that I watched on 60 Minutes. If you missed it, check it out on the internet. Mm. It is really worth listening to what they had to say. And we wish them luck because a lot of our young people, our white kids, are being killed through this opioid abuse.
I live in Ohio, actually.
Do you?
Yes, I do. I live just north of Cincinnati. One of my good friends I went to high school with, brilliant kid, brilliant guy, overdosed and died. I've actually known quite a few people in my town that have passed away due to heroin and other drugs. Mm-hmm. I mean, you go up to like Dayton, Ohio, and things like that. It's just overwhelmingly there's a huge problem there, and it's picking up in southeastern Ohio as well. But in my area, it's an epidemic. At least I have a sheriff here that understands that. Things about the heroin and fentanyl, and he's trying to bring some attention to it. But yeah, I've had a lot of people that I've known personally, good friends, that have passed away due to this crisis and this problem.
We've all been touched by it, either knowing someone, or in my instance, my cousin from South Carolina lost his boy, Christopher, to opioids. And I've had many, many phone conversations. I wanted to have George on my show to talk about it and to show you how devastating it is for these people. He couldn't hardly get through a phone conversation with me in private. He said, Georgia, I can't handle it. I can't come on your show because I will fall apart. I mean, these deaths of these young, beautiful people, starting with some, in his case, for instance, an athletic injury, an injury that then gets a kid addicted for life and ends up killing that kid at a very early age. I just don't think that you can get over that.
And that's the OxyContin kind of thing where they get people addicted to that. These people get on this drug. They realize, hey, you know what? It's hard to get a prescription, and heroin is cheaper. So they go out and get involved in that. And it's just a gateway into this, to where, you know, they're destroying their lives because of some minor injury or something in their life that led to it.
Yeah. Well, this Mike Moore on his interview spoke a lot about Ohio. You need to check it out, because what he said they have found is these truckers are bringing in massive, massive amounts of opioids to these little tiny towns that barely have three handfuls of people. And they're trying to understand how these truckers are being allowed to bring this in. So He's really going after this.
Yeah,
thank God.
Yeah, hopefully he investigates it and sees who's ordering this.
That's what he's doing.
Yeah, thank God.
Yeah, yeah.
And what would be the benefit of taking it to a small town? There wouldn't be a huge amount of money to be made in a small town.
Well that's what he's saying. What are they doing?
Is there a more nefarious, side to it that they're going after, the flyover country in America where it's majoritively white and they're, using these drugs to kill off white people? I mean, that's a bit conspiratory, but
I think statistics prove it's not a conspiracy, but it's fact.
Yeah.
My neighbor, Bradley DeHaven, did a couple of shows with me. His son was addicted. A beautiful boy, a beautiful athlete. Bradley wrote two or three books on opioid addiction and has been a real activist in this. And he said to me on one of my shows, I knew that I would either get a phone call telling me my son was dead or in prison. And luckily, it was the latter. And the boy had been arrested finally and put in prison. And that began to be his turnaround. His father went, got him out of prison, put him in a rehab, not for 30 days, not for 60 days, but for over a year, because you can't get clean in 30 days. And the boy has now been clean for 12 years. So that's a success story. And there are success stories, but there's so many of the other. Mm-hmm. It's just heartbreaking.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, I too, old neighbor who here in South Carolina, she lost her son. Same stories that you guys are telling. So, yep, it's definitely it is an epidemic. I would agree with you there. We have a lot of problems. If it's not drugs, it's massive non-white immigration and the fact that diversity is chasing us down. So,
yeah.
On top of the propaganda and demoralization, it's once you look at the back up and look at the big picture, it's impossible to deny that there is a war on white people and white genocide is the objective. Yeah. It's impossible.
Well, let's look at South Africa. My God, is that what we can look forward to? Is this hatred is continually promoted between all people of color against us? I mean, really far-fetched as some think that may be, look what's happening in South Africa. Talk about a genocide.
Yeah, it goes to show that all these white people that believe in loyalty to humanity doesn't have loyalty to you. You can have all this love and for humanity, but it does not mean that they feel the same way. And South Africa is a perfect example of that.
Yep, absolutely. And I think that's why we need to flip the script on this and make sure that it is known that it's not okay to be anti-white, that this whole program is targeting white people and it's not okay, that this the whole theme on everything and the hatred of white people is not okay.
It is not okay to hate anybody, really. And certainly it's not okay to only hate one group of people. And right now, we are the people where the hatred is being promoted towards us. I don't hear anybody talking about hatred for any other group. Do you? The level that we're seeing here?
Not at all.
Not at all. No.
We're accused of it, but they can't seem to pinpoint it.
Well, we're accused of it because we try to defend ourselves against it. And they see that as hatred, you see, when in fact what we're trying to do is just defend ourselves against this horrible aggression coming at us.
Mm.
Right.
Yeah, the constant labeling of being racist, Nazi, white supremacist, if we dare speak out and be pro-white. That's why we have to fight that whole... the consensus of anti-whitism that predominantly is being pushed by white people, that white people are hating themselves and pushing this hatred of the white race on, and there cannot be anything white. There cannot be a town white, that's a school white, a country left white. Everything must accept, anything too white is demanded to accept diversity to the point where we are a minority.
Yeah, I was watching the Democrat debates, and they were all jumping on Joe Biden for apparently that he doesn't hate white people enough. That was essentially their finger pointing.
Yeah.
That he needs to do more to hate white people. And then, of course, they have to get up there and defend themselves and prove that they hate white people more than anybody else.
Who can hate whites the most? Stand up, raise your hand.
What's horrible is that the GOP actually joins in that game. Mm-hmm. They played that same game of who hates white people more.
That's it.
It's really gotten to be a comedy show, a clown show. And if it weren't for the seriousness, really, everybody, of what's happening to us, it would be laughable. But it's not funny. It's very real. It's very real.
It is very real. If it was happening to another group, I could probably laugh at it. But it's happening to my race, and I'm objecting to it. In this clown world, everything that goes on within it, the transsexual, anti-white stuff, all of it is just craziness, and it needs to come to an end. We have to start discussing it. It comes to an end by everybody discussing it, breaking out of your demoralization, and discussing it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Well, you know, all I ever wanted to do on my show was have the discussion. I never wanted to, as I told you earlier, My intention was never to come on and start calling for violence, inciting violence or hate against any group. I don't believe in violence. I don't think it's the answer. And I think if we don't get smart here real soon, you just might see a big, ugly civil war on our streets. Mm-hmm. And what's happening now is we see the crime in the inner cities and all the rapes and the terrible stuff going on. And until that hits our small towns, people see are still asleep. Until it hits your little tiny town where you see it actually happening, I think people will stay kind of either in denial or asleep. But it's going to come if we can't stop it. And how do you stop it? You stop it by having honest discourse. That's all I ever wanted to do.
That's right.
But you see, you can't have that because they label you pro-white if you are defending what you're seeing happening to your people. So there's no ability to have an honest discussion.
Mm, absolutely. Yes, we've talked about this same stuff, Georgia, where, you know, censorship causes violence. You know, we certainly aren't inciting violence and we are opposed to any sort of violence. But we want to have a discussion. And if they censor us and our, you know, ability to talk about these important issues, then the only other human alternative is violence. Yeah. So they're the ones that are, you know, wanting the violence, not us.
Yeah, psychology
well, you know
today.
They do. You know they do. They want all people of color to come together and come up against whites and start this civil war. That is what they do want. Yeah. They want chaos.
Yeah, it's kind of like a Charles Manson, that whole helter skelter thing is now their official policy.
Where they you said before, though, that they're pushing it the other way. You know, they're forcing, you know, by doing this, they're pushing more and more people into our camp because it's becoming so blatantly obvious, you know, more and more what's going on. So it's really kind of backfiring on them in a sense.
Yeah, psychology today.
Oh, I think it is.
Psychology Today actually did a study about it, and they say that censorship is actually proving the white genocide people correct, and it's also leading to violence. It will lead to violence. So even psychology.
Well, what do you think happens to people when they are not allowed to speak?
Right.
They will internalize that anger because they're not allowed to speak up in their defense. And they're going to turn human nature. You're going to try to survive. Right. So what are you going to do if you are kept quiet and, you know, kept in this censorship mode long enough? Violence will naturally erupt.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's
what they're
hoping for, that so they could blame white people even more. That's what I suspect.
But. And justify even more censorship and more oppression.
Mm-hmm. It's a war, people. You know, it's a war.
Oh. It is.
It's a war, but I think right now it's a word war still. Eventually they might unleash, you know, all the non-whites against us, but for now it's still a word war. And violence doesn't work for us, I don't think, because it doesn't go to the heart of the problem, which is white demoralization, I think. Bob Whitaker was part of a group that helped bring down the Soviet Union, and they figured out what the problem was there, which was the people were, the Soviet government had a lock on propaganda, and they had everyone demoralized in terms of economics and, and the Soviet system. So, and the Samizdat were there trying to take down the Soviet system, but they were writing these long essays and they just weren't working. So Bob Whitaker went in there and said, okay, he noticed that whenever he crossed into the, across the Iron Curtain, that they had a kill zone, kill line there. Anyone that tried to escape got shot. So he said, well, why does the workers' paradise need to shoot escapees? And he got the Samizdat to repeat talking points like that to discredit the Soviet system. So when it comes to us, we're in this anti-white system where the anti-whites have a lock on propaganda. So that's the problem. The problem is the decades of anti-white propaganda have put white people into this demoralized state where they can't come to reasonable conclusions in the interest of defending yourself. That's the problem. So the solution to me is to reverse that white demoralization. And I think you hit on that. And that's sort of unique. Most pro-whites haven't even got to that point. They're talking about Jews.
You were on AM radio talking about that, so that was amazing.
Phenomenal.
Yeah, we have to remoralize our people. That's, you're absolutely right. This is a word war, and our people have been so demoralized, so beaten down, that we have got to change that. We've got to, if there's any hope for us. I totally agree. Yeah, that Bob Whitaker must have been one brilliant man.
He was.
He was a genius. He saw the future and he knew what worked. So, but yeah, it is a word war. You know, when these anti-whites throw these terms at us like racist, Nazi, white supremacist, we have to be armed and able to throw it back at them that they're just anti-white. You're just saying that
anti-white.
Because I'm white.
Yep.
Yeah.
That one word.
Anti-white. When did you become so anti-white? I love it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Phrasing it in a question like that's a perfect way to introduce it to somebody. Because they have no choice but to deny it. They have to try to, because nobody wants to be anti-white. No white person wants to be considered a traitor. So you call them out on it and make them defend themselves.
Yeah, you put them on the defensive. In a word war, you have to discredit the other people's weaponized terms and then impose your own. So you have to, you're not going to deny you're a racist or deny you're Nazi or deny you're a supremacist. You're going to say, well, you're just saying that because I'm white. You know, you call anyone that any white person that doesn't hate themselves a Nazi. So, okay, in your opinion, I'm a Nazi. So you're saying anyone pro-white is a Nazi? Okay, in your opinion, I'm a Nazi. That's why we say anti-Nazi is a code word for anti-white. When you're calling people Nazi, you're just saying, you know, you're not allowed to be pro-white. You know, all their talking points and terms, all their terms are obfuscations. We call them code words. They mean something else than what they're saying. They're always, it's because they're always running this scam. Because they hate white people, want to get rid of them, but they won't come right out and say it. So so they use all these code
words. They use diversity, multiculturalism, all this stuff, which are all code words for getting rid of us. That's all it is.
That's right. It's weaponized words.
They say, I'm pro-white and admit it. You're anti-white and won't admit it.
That's it. Putting them on the defensive, you know, making them have to say, oh, I'm not anti-white, you know, or making them have to justify what they're doing and everything that they, anything that comes out of these people's mouths is a justification for white genocide or for hating white people, you know, that whites are evil or, you know, whites have conquered and enslaved, so, you know, they must be blended out of existence.
Right. They're constantly trying to say that we have a monopoly on hate. We have a monopoly on intolerance. But that's not true. They want a situation where they accuse us of being haters and then we're trying to deny we're haters. Okay. Well, you know, my attitude is, well, I hate anti-whites, and I admit it. You hate white people and won't admit it. Everybody hates something, you know. You got.
Well, I said earlier. Yeah, if we're so bad, if whites and the country we live in is so bad, why is it everybody is desperate to get here? Why would you want to go to a country of hateful haters? I mean, that to me stops the argument right there.
Yeah.
Why would you choose this country? Go somewhere else where they aren't known to be haters.
Yeah. It just goes to show the deception and fraud that the mass media and the anti-whites are engaged in right now, mm-hmm. where this is happening, where they're saying that we have to bring these people in here, while at the same time saying all the white people are Nazis and oppressive and racist. And so, yeah, it just goes to show the deception and fraud and the actual agenda of white genocide that they have intended.
Amen.
Yeah, one minute they say we're all the same.
I think our hour is almost up. Is it almost up?
That is.
Yep.
Thank you all so much for having me here today. And I want to thank Bob Whitaker and all of you who are part of the swarm that keeps those memes alive. Because truly, multiculturalism and all those words are code words for white genocide. And we are all asking for our fellow whites and European Americans to stand up and say it's okay to be white. And let's keep it going, folks.
Absolutely.
And it's not okay to be anti-white. You know,
Amen.
That's Georgia, we cannot thank you enough for the work that you have done and for coming and speaking with us today. We look forward to seeing what the future holds for you, and we will certainly be keeping track.
Well, I thank you for the invitation. It was a delight being with you, and it's always a delight being with my fellow white Europeans who have great pride in who they are. And I hope we can do this again sometime.
Absolutely. Sounds great.
Thanks for being with
us. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, and have a great rest of your day.
You as
Sounds
well.
Good. You too, Georgia.
Bye.
Bye-bye.